Hello and welcome to episode 27 of Glimmer of Genius. My name's Luke and I make YouTube videos. On the line with me is Level 2 Judge Grant David. How are you doing, Grant?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Excellent. On this show, we talk everything Magic the Gathering. We are Glimmer of Genius. You can find us on Facebook. We also have our own podcast website, glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Check us out there as well. This last week just gone, it's all about the Pro Tour. It wasn't this weekend, it was just the weekend before. It was still only a week or so ago now. And interesting things to talk about. But before we dive in, Grant, what have you been up to this week in the world of Magic?
I haven't really been playing any other formats apart from Standard, really. I think we talked about... Did we talk about Battle Wand a bit last time?
We did. We kind of gave it a little, what I like to call a tip of the cap in the end of the show, because I think we're both in agreement it's not necessarily something we'd both choose to play, but we both had a lot...
I've done one of those then since last time.
Okay. So what did you, think of it? Because the way we sort of left it was kind of like, yeah, we're not amazingly sold on Twitter Giant, but we both had a lot of respect for the set and what it looked like and everything else. So you actually got a couple of games of it, did you?
I got a game, so it was sealed, so there's eight of us in total, so obviously four teams, as it were. Mm-hmm. So we just opened six piece packs, built two decks, and it just, I don't know, I felt it really, really boring, to be honest. It just, everything took forever, and there were situations where, like, you know, you could block for so many turns, and all the time, like, you know, you only do, what is it? I know, you still do best of three, don't you? Or do you? Hang on. I can't even remember what we did.
I mean, it obviously had some resounding impact on you.
Yeah, I remember just getting to the end of it and thinking this is just awful. And the only redeeming feature was when, because everyone got a booster pack and didn't matter about prizes. I opened a Teferi from that. That was the only redeeming thing. Yeah, just it was interesting. We got to build some stuff, but like again, you're kind of like, oh, I wish, you know, this could go with this, or, and then there was a team which had both of the blue and red planeswalkers, because if you get one, you automatically get the other. Apparently,
what? Okay, fine.
So like it was just, and the thing is, they got them out once, and that was cool. But we just survived for three turns because it got to time of the round. And all we had to do was survive. But obviously they were going to win, because unless. Actually, I don't think there is any planeswalker removal in the set. So it's just like, okay, you've got planeswalkers. You know, you've got some creatures same as we do. You're just going to win now. But, you know, fortunately, it went to time. So, I don't know. It just seemed very slow and, I don't know. Yeah, was not a fan personally. But then that's probably because it's Two-Headed Giant. And Two-Headed Giant doesn't appeal to me at all.
No. Well, I kind of look at it and think, if you ever had that, and I know you do, because it's kind of how you approach building decks. But you approach building decks, and I don't think you'd be annoyed for me for saying, but kind of thinking, how can I have as much fun as possible? I want to do something cool and creative.
Exactly.
And I think Battle Bond is a little bit of that, but I kind of feel like it's a bit like that episode of South Park with the underwear gnomes. Step one, you've got these great ideas for a deck, and then step two seems to be missing, and then step three, profit. And it doesn't always really, doesn't kind of work like that.
The way it felt like to me is because the cards are really good and they were really well designed, and I've seen them working together in, like, say, a constructed deck. So if you build, say, a commander deck, but it feels like someone just got a commander deck, shuffled it, and then put it into, like, they got like 10, I don't know, 10 commander decks, just put them into drafting booster packs, basically.
Yeah.
Like, all these things look quite good, but they don't really work together, or just it was very kind of generic, like, oh, you've got a cool thing, I will remove it with this spell, like... But because you've got two versus two, you've kind of automatically got the right thing for the first couple of times it happens. But then after that, you're just basically top decking, and it was just because I was in red, was it red black, and my partner was in green white. It was just top decking, like for maybe like 80% of the games, kind of thing. It was awful.
Yeah. I kind of see it. I don't mean this in a negative way, but I kind of see it as a really clever kind of hook set. Because they're very they're very aware of the what people kind of would refer to as casual demographic within Magic. Not everyone likes to go to tournaments and play Standard and play to win. They're very aware, obviously, with their marketing of Commander, there's a casual market out there. And I think this Battle Bond thing is probably a good way of kind of trying to recruit a bit more of those kind of players. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. And it's great for the guys that want to play it, but yeah, it's great. When you were everything you were saying about it, it was just like, you know, you start, and then very shortly into it, you kind of just think, this isn't really going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, like, this Friday, for instance, like, I might be interested in drafting, but only if it's not Battle Bond is basically the thing. Yeah. So, yeah, like also my cousins, they've just got into playing and played them a bit, and they went for a draft. I think it was when Dominaria came out, actually, so that was really cool. And we mean to go for another game. That was supposed to be last week, and I said, oh, no, we're doing Battle Bond, let's do it for another week, because I think there was an odd number of people, and also I said, like, it's a bit kind of weird as a set. So again, they're asking this Friday, and I'm like, well, I need to find out if it's Dominaria, because if it isn't, then no, basically. So, yeah, I get that some people like it, but again, to me, it should be put into a commander deck, not drafted, because it just seems very, I don't know, not fun.
No, absolutely. No, that's fair enough. Battle Bond is what it is. Myself, though, I played not one game of Magic. I played five separate rounds of Magic this week, and it was good. I actually jumped into Magic Online, played a bit of Affinity. I feel like how I felt a couple of months ago when I started going back to the gym, because when little one was born, I just didn't go to the gym at all. I was just so tired, and I just thought I'm not going to bother. And I kind of
that baby way.
And I kind of felt a bit, I was playing it and I was just like, oh, I feel so rusty. And I was sitting there, I ended up going like 2-3 and I was like, that's fine. It was a friendly league, absolutely nothing really on the line apart from a few planeswalker points or whatever they're called. And yeah, I was at one point kind of sitting there and I was just kind of staring at the screen, pretty sure I'm making a play mistake right now, but I can't for the life of me figure out why. So I was just kind of dusting out the cobwebs a bit and getting into that. It was quite funny actually playing a friendly league, because I played against a few decks that I never normally play against. I played against five different opponents. I played against Abzan one round, played against a blue-red spells deck. That was quite cool. And then I played against zombies at one point. I actually lost to mono-black zombies, which was hilarious. Game one, I mulliganed to 4 because just happens sometimes. Yep. It was one of those scenarios where, like, Affinity, sometimes you look at your opening hand and you're like, I can play a 1-1 on turn 2 and then not an awful lot else. So you kind of have to mulligan those hands away. But then it's kind of like that's the trade-off for being able to empty your hand on turn 1. It happens. And then the second round, because he was playing like this zombie kind of like X1 recursion sort of style deck, I boarded in the Aether Grid, Garapat Aether Grid. I was like, right, I'll go on the, ping all this stuff plan. I basically had like a shed ton of artifacts out, but he managed to get me down to just like a really low total. He just killed me with that zombie that when it enters the battlefield, he like drained you for 2. So I couldn't.
Messenger, yeah.
That's the one, yeah. So I was just like, I managed to stabilize and I was just like machine gunning down all of his stuff. I was like, yes, this guy cannot get through. And he just like cast that. I was like, oh, okay. Fair enough. That was quite fun playing against something that was a little bit different, because you don't always see that in the competitive leagues.
I've always wanted to play that deck. It means, unfortunately, I've got everything apart from getting 4 Phyrexian Obliterators. Like, I've got Lilies now. I think I'd need a few more Messengers, but I like just having Phyrexian Obliterators. Still just like one of the best cards printed, in my opinion. Like,
it's cool.
And also, I like cards that reward you for going monocolored, particularly in formats I don't really like that. And just having that, we've just finished them with Gary, is just like, because I remember obviously that being a thing in Theros, it's just, I really like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get there with it, it's really useful. But no, that's quite fun.
Well, I think the first modern tournament I went to, a friend of mine was playing that, and opponent saw that he played Phyrexian Obliterator and misread it, and thought it was like when it was, when it's dealt damage, sacrifice a permanent or kind of thing. And he double bolted it.
Oh.
He was like, oh, it sucks, but I'll sacrifice 2 things. Like, no, sacrifice 6 things. That's cute.
Can I take this back? I just imagine the look on someone's face when they discover that's what actually happens.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Oh. RTFC. It's the most important thing I'll ever tell anyone.
Yeah. Other than me making a fool out of myself on the internet playing Affinity.
Sure.
The other stuff that kind of happened a little while ago, as we mentioned briefly, was the Pro Tour. Where was the Pro Tour?
I don't know. It says Dominaria. It is in Dominaria land.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Excellent. Sure. Cheap flights to Dominaria.
Yeah.
So yeah, Pro Tour held in Dominaria was a resounding success if you're interested in aggressive archetypes.
Copenhagen.
Okay. It's a bit closer to home.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, what was it? Top eight, I think. Was it seven of the decks were some sort of aggressive?
Red, 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 yeah. Not red, 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 red. Yeah, correct.
Yes. So not really a terrible amount to say. I mean, if you want to go through the differences in the deck lists, then I'll post a link in the show notes. And I suppose the most interesting thing about them is Siege Gang Commander, because that's the most different card. Like, I mean, that I can remember. Everything else feels really quite stock. Mono red aggro with Hazarets or red black aggro. One thing that did make me laugh is they called one of these decks, was it this one? Yeah. Kazuyuki Takemura playing not red black aggro. So yay. Sorry. He was playing, there was so six decks were aggressive. He was playing red black mid range. So the key difference between that appears to be a 25th land and Vraska's Contempt. So if you were wondering what, you know, how to bridge that gap between aggro and mid-range, that's it right there. Also playing a couple extra copies of, where is it gone? Glorybringer. So, you know, obviously I'm not a complete Luddite. You know, I did notice that too about that. It makes me laugh. I feel like they probably looked at this and thought, oh, God, we can't have seven of them all the same kind of archetype. This one's got a couple more expensive cards. We'll call it mid-range.
It's got Khan in it as well. The other ones don't seem to have Khan in.
Oh, yes, sorry, Khan. I missed that. Yep. That I find interesting because back when the red-black aggro decks were called red-black vehicles, people were trying Khan in it because of the artifact synergies. So,
yeah, and Harpkaran and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so in my mind, and that's playing Harpkaran as well. So, I mean,
yeah.
And it's got a bit, actually, to be fair, it's a bit lighter on the Walking Ballistas. But, I mean, it's all much of a muchness, really. I kind of feel like it's still a red-black vehicles deck. It's just got a slightly higher top end.
Yep, I agree.
Which I actually think is a really good strength of this deck, because I don't think you want to be relying on just smashing face early. I think that's mono-red's territory, and it does it very well. And I think it's better to have cards like Glorybringer and Khans just to kind of really help go into the late game. You don't want to be in a situation where you're facing down a Chandra or something else unpleasant and not really able to deal with it.
Yeah.
And Rekindling Phoenix as well, in high numbers across all of the decks, to be fair.
Yep.
Good card is good. So yeah, that's the red blank aggro decks. All I really want to say about those. Nothing really earth shattering in any of those. One that I know you'll absolutely love is the Esper control deck. Yeah. Although, actually saying that, if there was a control deck that I could ever imagine you playing, it would probably be something like this.
It's got six creatures in it. It's just awful.
I know. It's just
like the whole point of the Scarab God is like, oh, I want to turn little things into more interesting things because they're 4/4s, and basically you have the choice of making a Scarab God and killing the other Scarab God, or a 4/4 Torrential Gear. Like, boring. Yeah.
Well, it's really pushing its colours, the blue-black nature of what it does, which is, I don't need to play creatures, I'm just going to take all of your creatures after I've killed them all and made you miserable. So it's
why
really...
is it Esper? It doesn't run any white cards until the sideboard.
Teferi.
Oh, yeah, cool. So he's the only white card. Wow.
He's that good.
I guess so.
I guess it's blue-black control with Teferi. That's basically what this is.
I get that he's good, but everyone seems to only be running two of him. Like, again, knowing my luck and just generally magic luck, like, can you rely on getting him by turn five that reliably just having two of him?
Let's see. So
he
they
doesn't have that much card draw, so...
No, because they're not playing... They're not so white that they're playing... Yeah, although with the Scarab God, that would give you six five drops, and then... I think maybe it's just curve purposes. You don't want too many five drops. Glimmer of Genius. Yeah, they don't have that many cyclers. Only two sensor. It feels quite strange to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, I understand control and it's quite interesting, like, you know, if you enjoy the sort of thing or whatever. But whenever I see a list for control, I always think this isn't reliably going to happen. But for some reason it does. Like, I don't know if I'm drawing cards wrong or something, but I don't see how they reliably get something that's a two or something.
No, I think the key with decks like this is you play fast and eventually you'll draw your win condition. Is the reality. Yeah. And sometimes... I mean, this deck doesn't really have it, but like you can play the cards. I remember I was playing Blue-White Approach. My secondary win condition would often be my way that I won a lot of the games, which was just trying to mill my opponents out. Because like in the control mirrors, everyone just counters everything and you end up just milling them out with the lands. So as long as you play quick enough, you just win that way. So eventually you'll get there. It just speaks volumes to like this just not being your play style, because you're just so turned off of the idea of playing this deck for anything more than 5 minutes that... you can't ever imagine actually getting there to draw what you need to win, just being so fed up with it. But no, I mean, it's a control deck. It does its thing. I like that syncopates being there. That kind of makes sense, actually, with the limited amount of sensors. Main deck, Argyle's Bloodfast feels quite interesting. I don't know why.
Yeah, I like that card. I've been running that in my standard deck. It's been quite useful, actually.
I think it's really nice. I'm just a bit, well, not concerned, but confused as to why that would be there instead of blue one.
Because everything's so aggressive, they need some way of life gaining. So if you get that out and then they get you to below five, you can just consistently sacrifice your Gearhulks and stuff you bring back with Scarab God for life, and gaining four life a turn is pretty killer against anything that's aggressive.
Okay, cool. That makes sense.
But that's what I found. I was playing my list, my Salt, I think I'm playing at the moment, because it reanimates stuff. I was playing against another black with a bit of green deck, and he was obviously a bit more aggressive than me and a bit faster. But because I got to that stage, I could just stabilize by gaining life by sacrificing tokens, and that's because that's how I won. And I imagine this guy probably does the same thing. But
no, that's a good shout. That is a good shout, because I mean, my assumption would be like tap out against mono red, and it's you kind of time walk yourself.
Yeah.
But if the life gain actually becomes relevant, because you obviously will be on low life totals, then that makes sense. I can imagine actually that being quite a pain in the ass. Like, yeah, you're at low enough life, they unlicensed disintegrate your torrential gear hole, and you just sacrifice it in response or something. That would be a pain.
Yeah, no, it all works.
That's nice.
White Black Benelia was 10th. That's interesting.
Where are you reading that?
Go to the bottom of your the one you linked me.
Yeah.
And it will say Copenhagen 9-16.
Oh, how did I miss that? I scrolled down first.
Scrolling intensifies.
Yeah. I think it's quite anecdotal to say that the format was dominated by Goblin Chainwhirler and his friends.
Huh.
But I just wanted to see what else there was in this deck. White Black Benalia 10th. Playing Gideon of the Trials. Gideon's seeing some love.
I do like Gideon, so yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Scrap Heap Scrounger. He's just so good. He's just such
History
a good
Benalia is still really high. Like, it wasn't. He started low, and it went up a bit, and I was like, okay, fine. And it went up to, like, over 20. I was like, oh, it's going to be dominated by this. But apart from this deck, it's not been played at all, but it's still really retaining its price, which is bizarre. But I really like History of Benalia, so I'm kind of disappointed it's not doing much more than this deck, apparently.
Weird. Is it not in the blue-white control deck? 11th place blue-white. See, this guy is listening to you. Forward to Fairy.
It's not in Esper Control. It's not in that one, yeah. Yeah, Forward to Fairy, that's better. That's more reliable. Because I always thought that's the way to do it, because with approach the second time, you know, you just get there faster and stuff. You just want to Fairy, like, all the time. And, you know, if Abraska's Contempt, you've got a spare one. Well, if you've got two, I just don't think it's going to happen. So, yeah, that's the right idea, in my opinion.
And this... This deck is, if Misery was a magic deck, then this is it. I mean, it's all the blue, white, no.
Yeah.
Everything. He's got one Walking Ballista in the sideboard. An unwind, a singleton unwind, which is the 3-mana counter target non-creature spell, untap up to 3 land, which is pretty cool. But yeah, actually Approach of the Second Sons and Teferi being the only win conditions, and a couple of Ibni Rivulets mill people out if shit gets real. Although I say Teferi is a win condition, it's more just another layer of misery because it doesn't actually win the game.
Yeah, I mean, if you get to the emblem stage, that's definitely more of the you win the game kind of, you know, Planeswalker emblems. Like Chandra's obviously the other one, really.
Yeah.
That's still pretty good.
Yep, and then again, as you scroll through the 6th to 16th, more of the same, like red-black. Another Esper control list. No Scarab Gods, except one in the sideboard.
And, yeah, I'm not sure about that.
No. And then blue-black mid-range. Would this style deck interest you at all? Because this sort of archetype has been floating around for a while.
And which one?
15th place. Usama Sajjad's blue-black mid-range. And it's basically blue-black good stuff.
Yeah, I'm fine with this. I would probably play this kind of thing if I had Scarab Gods. Yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, because it's just efficient cards, isn't it?
Yeah, I would run more Vraska's Contempt in my deck if I had them. Mm. But I'm kind of just doing a bit of a toolboxy thing, just because it means I don't have to buy expensive cards.
No, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. And again, more Chainwhirler at 16. So moving on, there was a couple of decks were highlighted on another article that I was reading. The deck that we were talking about last week that you were playing, Muldrotha, the Gravetide.
Yeah, there was an article about it on, I can't remember, I'll try and find the original article, but it was someone else had I don't know if they made the deck, but was talking about this. And then obviously I decided to build it, played it for a couple of weeks, and then also it's been in the Pro Tour. So, yeah, I don't know if this guy got it off of the same original article or whether he just came to the same conclusion, I don't know.
The list essentially is Mordrotha the Gravetide, and if you remember from the show last week, it's basically really kind of trying to make the most out of the Gravetide's ability. So during each of your turns, you can play up to one permanent card of each permanent type from your graveyard. As long as you've got the mana to pay for it, then you can cast whatever you want from your graveyard, basically. One of every different type of card that there is. So basically, lots of entered the battlefield effects being reused for value. And it's got a smattering of removal spells, Cast Down, Fatal Push, Rask's Contempt, and then Liliana, Death's Majesty as well, which I've always liked, just as a way of just recurring more stuff.
She's really good. The original list, I think, only had one of her, but I've put two in just because she's fantastic, because you mill stuff for you to then use for Mordrotha or for her, or you like turn, you know, whatever, get Mordrotha in the bin with, Charter Course or something, and then you go turn five, Lily, reanimate Mordrotha. And then you can go off of turn five with the whole reanimation thing. And if they kill Lily, you just do it with Mordrotha. If they kill Mordrotha, you just do it again with Lily.
Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. So good. They've got that window where it's kind of like, if you manage to get an activation off of Liliana to get something back, like Mordrotha, or they've got a turn to maybe kill something, do they kill that or do they kill the Liliana? It's really nice. How close is this? Because this has got two Walking Ballistas, two Scarab Guards, two Chupacabra, three Champion of Wits, three Cartsail Freebooter, and then four of Glintsleeve Siphoner and Gifted Aetherborn. Now, I know you were saying you hadn't necessarily got the Scarab Guards, but I mean, how close is this to what you were sort of tinkering with?
Well, I had like a fairly close to that list and then played it maybe three or four times and sort of went down my own sort of path with it. So it's a bit different now. But I had, what was the main thing? So I didn't, like you said, I didn't have Scarab Gods. I thought if you're playing blue-black and not running Hostage Taker, then there's going to be a pretty big reason why not. And so I've put in two Hostage Takers. Obviously, get Chupacabras, Champion of Wits. I don't know, does the original one run Champion of Wits?
I don't see why you wouldn't.
Yes, it runs three, yeah. So I run four just because being able to discard stuff is good. Mm. I've also got a Gonti just because being able to do that multiple times is quite fun. Walking Blister as well. I've got Charter Course, the less removal, because with the Hostage Takers and the Chupacabras, I actually had too much removal.
Oh, okay.
Like I actually wanted more stuff to play rather than just wait for stuff to remove and just have like a medium creature out. I've also got two Vraskas, so two Lilies, two Vraskas, only two Contempts and only three pushes. But then I've also got a Never, just because if you mill it or mill a spell card, you at least get to do something while it's in the bin.
Oh, I like it. That's really clever, actually.
Also gives you some random main deck graveyard removal stuff in case you're, I don't know, going against gifts or something. But no, other than that, it's there was not too much room in this deck for much else. I've got a Search for Azkaban mainboard because, again, that's just useful, and generally I just leave it untransformed. But the main deviation with Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, I found myself doing too much damage to myself, one, because everything's quite aggressive, and two, because of Glintsleeve Siphoner, which is really, really good, but I'd often run out of energy or run out of life. So with Woodweaver's Puzzle Knot, one, you get three life and three energy, which is pretty good by itself. But also, of course, you get sacrificed because you've got green, or even if you discard it, or if you blow it up, you get to redo it with Mordrotha. And I found that really, really good against aggro decks and just being able to keep Glintsleeve Siphoner and just do that every single turn kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main deviation. I respect everything that's in that list at the moment, apart from, I would say, there's probably a bit too much removal, but that's kind of the list I'd be running if I could afford Scarab Gods. I think Kitesail Freebooters are quite good, but I found when I ran them that you get them down and then they would just die and they'd get the card back kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although it's nice being able to recurse that, like late game, they're unlikely going to be holding anything back because they're probably going to be killing big stuff with that anyway. And I just found Duresses were just better and leaving the sideboard to give me more room for creatures. So, yeah, I did try that, but I didn't like it personally. But I suppose if they got Scarab God, then that's probably a bit better, I guess. So, yeah, I think my list is a bit weird with the puzzle, but other than that, it's more just stuff in place of Scarab God, really.
No, that makes sense. The freeboot is always going to be a bit of a tricky one for that sort of reason.
Yeah, Gonti has been really quite funny sometimes as well. So, just being able to steal multiple things. Like, I think I stole a thing that made Sprolings and then a thing that also buffs the Sprolings. Like,
oh, nice.
So that was kind of a slap in the face, which was quite funny.
I played against that deck once online, the Saprolin deck. I didn't really get much time. I only really kind of saw bits of it. Is it kind of a bit cutesy, this deck? I know, obviously, I've not seen it in the Pro Tour, but I mean, like, even at like a shop level, is are people kind of throwing it around?
There's a kid that's just sort of started that's playing at the moment, so it's not really fair to judge it on that. But I think it's got something to it, maybe. But I don't think it's ever going to get to anything we're going to see in the Pro Tour. Yeah.
No, that's fair enough. Yeah, because I know there was a lot of hype about the green black card that came out, and it's cool. I just wondered if it actually kind of been anything.
The confusing thing is the kid that runs it isn't running that at all. Oh, he's okay. Just running like green black, and then he wants to get to the bit where is it the 5-mana thing where if you have City's Blessing, you'll probably get +2/+2. And I was kind of trying to explain, it's fine, but if you've got, because it's just all one-way stuff, so it's all just him making scrollings, there's no, like, removal, there's no protection. I said, well, what happens, and obviously this did happen in one of our games as well, he attacks for loads, which he thinks is lethal with scrollings, and I just, Raska's Contempt, the big one, and then block beneficially for the other little scrollings, which obviously you then lose it, because although you keep City's Blessing, you lose the buff that goes with it. So I said, you need to put some, you know, some blossoming defences and stuff in, but... Yeah. Oh, well.
He'll learn, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this is his first time playing Standard, so... And he's kind of like, oh, I don't want to go back into Kaladesh because that's rotating. I said, yeah, it's rotating like 6 months, though, and it's like a common, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, but, it's not like you're saying pick up Chandra's, is it?
Yeah.
I remember when I first had decks, and people saying, oh, I think you should change this, and you're like, but that's the reason I made the deck.
Yeah.
Don't say things like that. Card's great. Leave me alone. And then you realise, oh, it's really bad. I should probably listen.
Yeah.
And then you stop playing Magic for fun.
Yep.
There was a couple of other things that I saw. One of them was Paolo Vitor Dama de Rosa has written an article. He's written it on the Mothership. It's called it How to Build, Almost There, Green-Blue Khan. So yeah, PV wrote this deck about it, basically green blue Khan. I thought it was quite interesting. So he says in the article that two people had a 7-3 record with it, which is quite good.
Implement of Ferocity.
I know, right? What? Some of the stuff feels a bit left field. So for those who missed out on Aether Revolt draft, Implement of Ferocity is a 1-mana artifact which says for 1 green. Sacrifice it, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature, only anytime you can play a sorcery. When you have the implement enter the graveyard from the battlefield, you get to draw a card as well. So 1 mana, and then another mana to put a 1/1 counter on something and draw a card. So that's what that does. And I guess you could ask, why aren't they playing that with the snake? Because that seems good. But this deck just seems to be making the most of cards like Scrap Trawler and Glintness Crane. PV goes into great detail in the article. I recommend reading it because it's really quite interesting to see how they kind of come up with decks and, you know, their process into doing it. Basically kind of get Khan, get the good cards like Verdurous Gearhulk, Walking Ballista, and make sure they actually hit those and make them bigger. It's interesting. A secondary win condition being with Walking Ballista and Scrap Trawler, because you can just get Ballista back every time an artifact dies. That's why they've got Implemented Ferocity.
What, for Walking Ballista?
Yeah. So I'll just read out the thing that he puts, because it'll make sense if I read it out verbatim rather than actually kind of try and explain it. So the second way to win is with Ballista and Scrap, with the Ballista. So,
oh, I see.
So the Scrap Trawler, which is whenever he or another artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return to your hand, target artifact in your graveyard with a lesser converted mana cost.
Which is Walking Ballista, nice.
Yeah, so it lets you bring back a Ballista every time any artifact that costs 1 or more dies, including the Trawler itself. So with the implement of Ferocity in the deck, it not only pumps the Ballista if it's in play, but it also brings it back if it's in the graveyard and counts as an artifact for Khan and Metallic Rebuke as well. Because he's also playing Metallic Rebuke, which is the Convoke for artifacts. Counterspell. It's sort of like a bad mana leak. So yeah, just really quite interesting little deck there. Messing around with +1/+1 counters and artifacts. It's nice.
I like that. If I had the Khans, I would definitely want to play that. But I'm not going to spend money because Khan is, what, how much now? Like some ridiculous amount.
I'm sure it's insane.
It's gone down. It was a... about, what was it? All-time high was $68. It's now gone down to about $55, but still, yeah.
Thanks, but no thanks, man.
I like the deck. I like that city sort of combo, but not infinite, just nice kind of combo. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I quite like about it, is you just got ways to all of a sudden kill you out of nowhere. But
yeah, it's nice.
but nothing's too degenerate.
Yeah.
Like, it's got the ballista, which sits there, and you're kind of like, oh, I'll sack it a few times, ping you. Oh, I'll bring it back, and now I've got a gear hulk, and it's massive, and you're like, oh, God, now I'm just dead. So, yeah, it's quite cool. Land base is quite nice, too. Green, blue, pretty simple. Not really making much out of the energy there. It's got Aether hubs, but I think they're just there to have untapped sources of the colour they need. Oh, and Servant of the Conduit is a wild.
Yes, they benefit off each other, yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing I was a bit kind of weird on was the... oh, it's got Aether Sphere Harvester, actually, as well. Four of them, which I guess this is all for Karn, artifacts for Karn, which is good. But Sorcerer Spyglass in the main.
Yeah, I think that's a good card. I haven't got any, but I think that's a very good card.
Main deckable?
I don't know. Definitely not more than two.
No.
I think one is fine. If you're running an artifact deck, I think it's fine, because you can play it, you might hit something that's, you know, okay, I guess, in that, but worst comes to worst, you've got an artifact that you can improvise with, or if you get rid of it, you can then recurse it and keep looking at their hand and stuff, I guess. But I don't know if they can sacrifice it to anything. Can they sacrifice it to anything?
No.
No, but yeah, I think it's still good.
If you could sacrifice it to stuff, I'd like it a bit more. I suppose it's nice with the improvise.
Yeah.
It's also nice to peek. A little peek. What you got going on over there? You know?
Yeah, I think that's useful regardless of what you hit, to be honest. Particularly if it's turn two and, you know, it then sets up. It doesn't mess up your curve too much. It sets up turn three or, you know, a counterspell or whatever.
I suppose it's quite nice against all these red-black decks if you look at the hand.
Yeah.
Especially if you're being on the play against something like a red-black vehicle style aggressive decks and just going, right, oh, you've got a Heart of Kieran there. That's nice. And then you name that, and then that's really going to slow them down. That's quite nice. Or Chandra.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Or Hazoret to a certain degree as well.
Yeah, yeah. All the stuff.
Well, it's gone from, what was it? So May, end of May, it was 150. It's now spiked to $6. It's gone down to $5 now.
$5. Wow. Yeah, $5. It's nice. Big bucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Pithy needle.
Yeah.
It's a good card.
I mean, that's what I think we were saying before, like corsets or, like, you know, when planeswalkers like Healy Ray or whatever are dominating. We just like, just have a pithy needle in every single, you know, rotation or whatever. This is basically, you know, you don't have to reprint it. You can just do something slightly different. I think this is perfectly fine, like two drop rather than one drop, but does more things. I think that's great.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice to play in the same design space, but also give people something a little bit different to what perhaps they're expecting it. So you don't just get the, oh, that's Pithy Needle. Moving on. You're actually getting the, okay, that's like Pithy Needle, but
yeah.
Is there a way, are there any more applications? It's almost a little bit like they did with, even though it was epic fail, Mox Amber. Because everyone's like, oh, it's a Mox. And then it's kind of like, even though nothing's ever really happened with it, it's still going to get people thinking, right, how can we break this? What extra kind of gimmicks have we got to employ to try and make this viable? Is there something that's actually going to work here? It gets people thinking about stuff and it's interesting. So, yeah, no, I think it's really good to do stuff like that still. It's just a shame that Mox Amber. Well, actually, it's probably not a shame, really, because I don't think anything good ever really came out of Moxes.
No. I'm keeping mine just because I can't sell it for very much at the moment. But yeah. I just don't see what's ever going to happen with Mox. Like, what needs to be released for Mox Amber to ever be a good card? Like, it's you know, it came out at 20, and then they were like, oh, it's a card, went up to 35, went 20, and then it's just been going, went up to 30 for a bit, and now it's just been slowly going down, it's now at 13, so, yeah.
Yeah. I think the problem with something like that is, I don't think it needs just one thing to be good. It needs multiple things to be good because of the nature of how Legendre works.
It'd be interesting if it was, I don't know if this would break it instantly, but if it was just a historical one, because then it'd obviously be able to do, well, you wouldn't be able to do it off of Mox Opal, but you know what I mean? Like, it would go off of Legendary Artifacts as well. But I don't know how that would work with, maybe if it generated colourless off of that, I don't know.
Oh, Christ knows.
Yeah, I don't know what the implications of that are, but just, yeah, that's, I think, why it doesn't really work, because turn zero is cool, but you don't have creatures or planeswalkers turn zero, so who cares? I know, I like to see this in an affinity deck, but it runs that one-drop dog from Kanagawa.
One-drop dog?
You know, the Isamaru Hound of Konda.
Oh!
The one white 2/2 creature So you put three or four of him in affinity, right? you tap the opal for him, and then you could tap the amber for the rest of the game for white mana. Yeah, that's gonna happen. I've now predicted it.
I love it. Every time I think about Mox and Amber, you get half of a good idea, and then it just kind of doesn't go anywhere, does it? You just think, no, it just doesn't work.
It's not even like you know, for sometimes you can go like, oh, this would be good if you had this card from this format, or it'd be good if you had something like this card from this format, it'd be good if something existed. You can't even think of what would be good with it. It's bad. Like, you need like a zero drop, you know, Ornithopter legendary creature, really, don't you? You need like a legendary 0/2 that happens to be some sort of colour, you know?
Yep.
But no.
It's just too much. What's the Antiquities War?
Oh, I love that card. So each turn you do, it's basically Tezzeret if he was the Saga.
Okay.
The Agent of Bolas one. So you do the look at the top, get an artifact thing, and then turn three, everything turns into a 5/5 for that turn.
Oh.
Yeah, I really like it. I kind of want to run this deck mostly because of that, but it's only running one, I'd run like three of them.
So it enters the battlefield.
Just look at top five, get an artifact, do it again, then everything turns, artifact turns into 5/5.
So it's literally one turn, so you play it, you get a counter, next turn.
You look for another artifact, probably play it, and then turn three, those two artifacts you played, and hopefully some other ones will turn into 5/5s, which, including Aethersphere Harvester, is quite a big deal.
Yeah.
Because you've got a flying lifelinker that's a 5/5.
Oh, because it has flying...
When it's a creature, yeah.
Ah.
So it doesn't have to be crude for it to do anything. Say if you did the same thing, part of Crown, obviously it'd be a 5/5 vigilance and flying.
Fair enough. It's weird that something can have flying whilst not being the creature.
Well, no, it does turn into a creature, just it's not turning into a creature the way that it's planned.
Oh, no, absolutely. I just never really kind of thought about that, the fact that Aethersphere Harvester always just has flying. It doesn't just becomes a creature with flying. It's already got the ability.
I'd thought about it for a while because I was planning on doing a Tezzeret deck before he rotated, but he obviously ran Tezzeret's Touch, so obviously you turn it into a 5/5, which of course if you do on vehicles it's really, really good, so I'd already sort of thought about that, but no one really played Touch Tezzeret, so it never came about in normal play.
Yeah.
But this is me just obviously when a set comes out putting all the weird things together and see what happens.
Okay, so that's everything in the Pro Tour that we really want to talk about. I say it's a bit of a weird one really, because there's a lot of aggro there and it's a lot of stuff that's kind of existed for a little while, and I quite like it. I think even if people don't really like the fact that aggro's, or that there's a lot of the same kind of deck in the in the format, I actually think aggro matchups can be quite interesting. There's a lot of maths, a lot of maths, a lot of interactions. It's not just about, oh, who goes first, oh, you're going to win. And I know people are going to be saying, oh, well, whoever wins the die roll. It's like, yeah, okay, that might impact a significant percentage of the time. You know,
I think it's different with this kind of meta, though, because it's not red deck wins, it's red, black aggro wins. Like, and the difference between that and straight up red from, obviously, you know, days of the Goblin Raven Master kind of era. Like, it's not like a turn three, turn four win. It's normally a bit slower than that. And I think that matters because decks actually interact with stuff. Like, sure, you know, you'll get to turn three, turn four, go, I'm not winning this kind of thing. But there is actually some interaction, which is not, so it's not as simple as people make out. I think those people are just used to the typical red deck wins of like 10 3, 10 4, and it's applying it straight to that, which I don't think it is at all.
No. And I also think, as well, as much as I was kind of skipping over a lot of what the decks were in the top eight and even down to even further in the tournament, there are actually differences in the decks. Like, if you actually sit there and go through them, there are different numbers of this, different numbers of that. So it's not just a case of, right, my opponent's played a Bowmack Courier on one. If they go Mountain Bowmack Courier, you don't actually know if they're going to be red-black or they're going to be mono-red. And so, you know, it's not necessarily obvious what they're going to have. And that extends all the way to turn five, where some decks are playing no Glorybringer, some decks are playing a one-off, others are going a bit more out there, which is what I would personally do, and play a couple more copies, maybe even three or four. So you've actually got to be really aware of all of the things they could have and actually make really interesting play decisions. I imagine it actually was probably quite difficult to actually do well against that field, because even though a lot of the decks are the same, there's a lot of variation within that. After playing four or five rounds and playing a lot of the same matches, that's going to be quite tough, because you've really got to kind of get a feel for what your opponent's kind of setting up for or what they might have. Because until you get to like the final rounds where you see deck lists, it's going to be a bit of a crapshoot, really.
Yeah.
No, I think it's really good. I think it's really fun. Hey, better this than like blue white approach mirrors all day, you know. if that was the deck to beat. Yeah. I think it's more fun than Teemer as well. I felt like Teemer felt a bit more, I don't know, like Teemer versus Teemer matchups were just a bit more soul destroying than this.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
So that is all for now from us. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, give us some feedback on our Facebook page. We can also be found on the MTG Cast Network. That is mtgcast.com, as well as our own podcast website, which is glimmerofgenius.podbean.com. Also, if you're interested in even more Magic the Gathering content, then please check out my YouTube channel, Vincent Games, which you can find in the description below, or search up Vincent Games on YouTube. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and stay tuned for more.
See you soon.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Kind of like a robot chipmunk.
How do I sound now?
Much better. It was weird. I couldn't even hear the words you were saying. It was odd. It's fine. You sound less odd now.